This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our 13th episode of Brainwaves, and this week we're discussing Brain Awareness Week. I didn't realize there was a Brain Awareness Week, but joining us for her show, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, our neurogeneticist. How are you today, Dr.
Azlina? I'm good, thank you.
And you've brought along with you, in view of Brain Awareness Week, Calista Lee, who's a youth caregiver, which is, you know, love to hear your story, Calista, and Datin Jacqueline Wong from the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation, Malaysia. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you today?
Great.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Brain Awareness Week, Dr. Azlina, you want to tell me a little bit more about it? I didn't realize it existed.
Yes, so it's an initiative run by the Dana Foundation, which is based in the United States. And it's just a week where many people across the world, they run, you know, various programs to get people talking about, you know, the brain and get them more involved. They run programs in schools, in colleges, in universities, in public areas, in community centers. So it's just, you know, to engage people more about how the brain works, and also to talk to them about, you know, the latest research that's going on and, you know, that kind of thing.
And reaching out. What about programs in Malaysia? Have we had very many programs in view of Brain Awareness Week even in the past?
Yeah, so how it works is that anyone in Malaysia can organize a program. It doesn't come under a particular organization as such, and then you just advertise that you're doing these programs on the Dana Foundation website. So, for example, at University Malaya, for a number of years, we've been doing some programs with kindergarten. We've been meeting sort of six-year-old kids and showing them, you know, what the brain looks like in different animals, and why is it that if you close your eyes, you can still touch your nose? You know, those kind of like, you know, how do you balance yourself, and, you know, what part of the brain is involved in it? Just reaching out to them, getting them to kind of be a little bit more aware about their body and the brain, that kind of thing. And then we've also been doing some programs with older school children. So last year we had an event at the, there's a maze at University of Malaya. So we did an event there where we got 9-year-old children to come and try out the maze. And we had a number of other activities, like we had a model of the brain. And so we spoke about, you know, all the different parts. And so we cater it depending on age appropriate kind of, you know, abilities. And so and so this year we wanted to do something with the newly opened Atria Alzheimer's Foundation Community Center. So this would be working with the elderly population, but also bringing in the youth. And so that's what we're running this year. But there may be other programs also running concurrently in other universities as well.
Okay. Yeah. Datin Jacqueline, you want to just tell me a bit about the Atria Alzheimer's Community Center? What is that about?
All right. Last year, we celebrated the World Alzheimer's Month in September. Yeah, and again, this event is celebrated around the world during the month of September, okay, to raise awareness and advocate on dementia, okay, not only in the elderly, but in the mid as well. And same time, try to raise awareness to policymakers, to youth, I mean, all across the board on what dementia is, you know. This year, working together with Dr. Azlina and her team of students, we have a program whereby we involve persons with dementia to, how do you say, raise awareness on how people with dementia actually are included in our society and our lives. So now this Atria Community Center came about when we had the event in the mall last mm-hmm. year. And when the mall management saw what is involved, they were actually very kind. They gifted us a corner where they gifted us a lot, you know, to turn into a community corner where we call it a dementia-friendly community corner for everyone, you know, to use. And this is in collaboration with the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation Malaysia, whereby we're running it, you know, to use it as a platform to raise awareness as well as to come up with community programs, you know, for public to be aware of where they can get information on dementia, you know, doctors to see, activities to do, you know, or even caregivers respite.
How does the Atria Alzheimer's Community Centre actually function? So do you have people with dementia coming there? What do they do? That kind of
thing? Yes, we have people with dementia coming with their caregivers. We also have inquisitive and rather to find out more public, you know, because when they heard about the World Alzheimer's Month last year, they all came, you know, out of curiosity, oh, what is this place? What is this community corner for? And at the same time, we advocate awareness of it. Because of it, we run health talks every Saturday, 2:30 to 4. And we run elderly yoga class every Sunday morning, 11:30 to 12:30. All services and all talks are free of charge because it's a form of raising awareness to the public. Because dementia is not a disease where you get it tomorrow, you know. It is a disease that is cumulative through 15, 20 years, you know. And this is something that a lot of people do not know. And they take dementia as a form of old age.
I think we've spoken about this at length, Dr. Aslina, now about how your health in your 40s is so crucial to... all of this developing later on in life. Calista, you're actually a caregiver. Tell me your story. You look after your grandmother. You want to just share that journey with me?
My grandmother, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Unfortunately, she has passed on already a couple of years back. But my family and I, we went through the whole process of learning how to care for someone with Alzheimer's disease. And at the time, we did not have such resources to go to, such as the Atria ADFM Center. So it was
a challenge.
It was quite difficult.
How did you manage it though? So in the end, how did you look after her?
She was diagnosed quite late. When she was diagnosed, it was already quite severe. And my father and his brothers, we took turns to take care of her to a point where we had to send her to a home, and she deteriorated quite quickly after that.
Dr. Aslina, this is always a challenge, isn't it? And I was reading an article where it said that sometimes, you know, as children, grandchildren, we want to look after them when they have dementia, Alzheimer's disease being one of the more prevalent ones. But sometimes they're better off in a home because they know best as to how to look after them and their needs. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's difficult to say what would work best for everyone. You have to look at how the family dynamics work. So, for example, you know, if you were close to your parents and you had a good relationship with them, then, you know, naturally you would feel caring and wanting to look after them when they're older. But I understand in some families you may not have that relationship. So even if they were to live with you, it would be very troubled. You know, it might not be such a peaceful place to live. And so that's where perhaps, you know, some people would consider living in a nursing home might be better for both parties, because then, you know, it's much calmer in that sense. So it's very difficult. You know, you really have to look at your situation, what kind of support system you also have. If you were to decide to be a caregiver, you know, there's actually a lot that is involved, because you have to also make sure that you can get help from outside when you need some time off and that kind of thing. And, you know, every family has to decide for themselves.
Yeah, really. It's a very tough decision to make that. And Jacqueline, you would have interacted a lot with families.
Yes, that's right. In our case, Alzheimer's Malaysia runs a daycare centre, because especially in Malaysia, not everybody can afford a maid or a domestic helper at home, you know, to help with. And even if they do, well, they're busy with younger children, cleaning the house, cooking, everything, on top of taking care, you know, of your loved one with dementia. So we run a daycare whereby we offer an 8 to 5, you know, where you send your loved one there, we take care of them, you know, with meals and so on and so forth, clean them, and then after work you pick them up in a home to give them a bit of a respite. For me personally, it's the dynamics of each family, but for me personally, and in my opinion, already this person does not have, you know, memory of you or some of the family. And of course, when they see you more, they know who you are. But then again, if you leave them in a long-term care and you see them maybe during the weekends when you're free, do you think they would remember you?
Right.
You know, so half the time I'm somebody's daughter in the daycare mm-hmm. because I'm there often enough, you know. But what about the families who leave them there for long term? You know, I've gone to Singapore and many places to look at long-term care, to look at the facilities and things like that. We also have to understand how we live today. It's so stressful with work and things like that. Do we have time after work when we get home at 8 to visit your mom or your dad, you know, or a loved one in a care home?
Yeah.
You tend to say, okay, let's do it in the weekend. And one weekend can turn into 2, into 3, into months, and in the end of the day, forgotten. You know, it's sad. Mm. I've seen some cases. I won't say, you know, it's the same in Malaysia because we still lack a lot of long-term care homes for dementia. So for me, like I say, we run a daycare, full stop.
Yes. Do you think that's a better model, however?
I think it's a better model where, you know, each family takes responsibility. Yes, we can care for them when you're at work, you know, or when you're away perhaps, you know, but we want you to care for them after.
Mm. Calista, as the granddaughter, how did you help? And you would have, you know, witnessed or experienced the challenges that your family faced. I mean, as you said, you had different uncles and aunts who took turns. But did that work, do you think? And what were some of the challenges that you faced?
So there's 3 houses. So she would spend some time with my family and then my uncle's family and then my other uncle's family. So I think as people with dementia or Alzheimer's disease, as it progresses, they tend to wonder a lot. Mm. So what happened in my home was that she kept on thinking that she wasn't home, and she kept on asking my mom, give me some money, I want to go home. Yeah, so it was cases like this that grew even worse, and so we eventually, and also certain other things that had happened. So then we had eventually had to put her in a home.
Yeah, for her safety as well.
So Calista, you probably would have been quite busy with school and everything at that time, right?
Right,
studying.
Yeah.
So did you kind of understand what was going on? I mean, you knew that your grandmother had issues, but did people kind of explain that she had this medical condition and, you know, it would progress? Did you, were those discussions done within the family?
No, so I did not understand what was going on. Mm. But later on, I grew to, I mean, I was interested in science. So then I decided to take up an online course. It's called Neurobiology in Everyday Life, Understanding Your Brain. Right. So there's actually a lot of these online courses free. And if you're interested in knowing more about your brain, it's always available. In this course, we got to understand what happens to the brain when you get Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease. And I got to understand from a science point of view what happened to my grandmother's brain. So,
I mean, I think that's really amazing. You know, when I heard that Calista had done that, proactively looking for these sort of online resources to find out more. I mean, I think that's also, you know, how the grandchildren and the youth can also be.
Yeah. Did you find
support the family in that sense?
Calista, did you find the signs intimidating though? Could you understand it?
Yeah. So this one was quite an easy course. It's a beginner level course.
Yeah, I think there have been other caregivers as well that I know of in Malaysia who have signed up for similar courses too. And you can choose the level. And they said that that's really very helpful because then they cover quite a wide range. So they explain the symptoms, they explain what's happening in the brain, they talk a little bit about the research that's going on, and then they talk a little bit about how to manage the situation.
Yes, and in Alzheimer's Malaysia, we do have outreach programs where every month in each state, you know, we work with an association in the state to come up with workshops, which is about 1.5 days over the weekend to help caregivers, you know, or even health professionals or even public who is interested in what dementia is, caring for it, what are the symptoms, how do you communicate, you know. All this is in a very intensive and short module, you know, where we actually took it from the essential care skills in Australia, because Australia started this like 20, 30 years ago, you know. So we looked at the syllabus and we actually looked into our culture, you know, and tailored it into a very short 1.5 day program to teach and to educate, you know, the public interested.
So understanding, helps with the caregiving, I suppose.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll come back and find out more about Brain Awareness Week. Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, a neurogeneticist in the studio, in our 13th episode of Brain Waves, we're discussing Brain Awareness Week. Joining us also, youth caregiver Calista Lee and Datin Jacqueline Wong, who's from the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation, Malaysia. Up next, we'll find out why this year's Brain Awareness Week is seems to be focused on the youth. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's our Brainwave series with Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, a neurogeneticist. Joining us, Calista Lee, a youth caregiver, and Datin Jacqueline Wong, also from the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation of Malaysia. We're discussing Brain Awareness Week, and this year it is focused on the youth. Dr. Azlina, why the youth?
Yeah,
they don't even have a second thought about of dementia or even Parkinson's.
I know, and at that age,
you always think it's never going to happen to me. Right?
Exactly, no. Exactly. And a lot of the time, like Calista was saying, you know, you a grandparent who has dementia may live in your home, but the caregiving falls onto the parents. So the grandchildren sort of see it happening, but you don't really. You're probably not too involved, but you're still affected by it.
Definitely.
It affects the whole family because you can see that your parents are stressed out. You can see, you know, that there might be a lot of a strained relationship. So it does affect you. And I think the reason why we wanted to do something with the youth, you know, pairing up the youth and the elderly is based on a number of studies as well. Actually, that says that, you know, the elderly, especially those with dementia, you know, they enjoy being around youth and children. And so that sort of brings them a little bit out of their shell, you know, a little bit. And so because I teach at the university, so I have youth available rather than younger children, you know, we thought we'll bring them together. And it's not just that, but it was also some of the other things that came about during the forum that we had during the World Alzheimer's Day celebration last year at Atria as well. Some of the issues that came about were in terms of caregivers, especially if you are the sole caregiver and you're also 70 years old and above, and you may not be able to lift your spouse in and out of the car very well. You know, and that's also a risk, you know, because we don't want them to get injured as well. And so there was some discussion about, you know, how do you get to the hospital and what are the transport services that are available? And it got us thinking that the people who are driving these technology and the services are the youth. And if we want to make a community that is more supportive of the elderly in general, but also people with living with dementia, it's going to come from the youth who have the technical skills or that are able to sort of troubleshoot, you know, how am I going to improve this situation? So, for example, you know, we sort of said that for some of the transport services that are currently available, you know, perhaps there could be an app that could pair up with these existing services that sort of highlighted some drivers that are, say, dementia-friendly, you know, so that you can see their profile and that you knew that if this person was going to come and pick you up from your home, that they would know how to handle somebody who might not want to come out, you know, so you don't get angry with them. You don't go, you know, hurry up, you know, I'm late, whatever. You know how to these people understand and they can take the time, and that makes for much calmer kind of environment. And who are the ones that are offering these services? It's the youth. It's not people in their 40s, their 50s. It's 20-year-old, 30-year-olds who sort of do this as a side income, you know? And so if we could kind of get a subset of those people to sign up for this dementia-friendly program, so to speak, you know, and then at least that would make the caregivers a little bit more open to going out, because a lot of the time you don't go out because you don't have
the means
to do it. And so you're isolated at home, and that brings up many other issues, you know. So if it was much easier to get out, to mingle, to socialize, that would also have a positive knock-on effect. So that's sort of partly as well, you know, how are we going to create a community that is going to be supportive? And we have to start early, not just with biomedical science students like Calista, but also with other youth who are involved in other disciplines, for example, like architecture and, you know, built environments. How do we make, how do we develop houses that are safer? How do we design residential areas that kind, inclusive with people in an elderly population, you know. So we got to get them to start thinking about that. And so, you know, this is one of the first steps, really, towards that.
Yes. Yeah.
Any country that has taken the lead in this, Duncan,
yes,
Jacqueline?
In fact, in Germany, in Holland, you know, in the UK, you know, there are architects looking into such, you know, purpose-built. And for us, working with Atria on the community corner, Atria is actually looking at making the mall dementia-friendly, you know, and aspiring towards it by 2019. Say, for example, signs, just too many signs, you know, to the toilet, to the lift, to the car park, to the basement. You know, it's confusing for a person with dementia because for them, it's very simple, you know, toilet or the lift, you know, to the car park, or anywhere else in the mall. And back to the youth, you know, what was important to me also was, as I said earlier, dementia is not something that you get overnight, but it's a cumulative thing. If youth was to be aware of it now, you know, not only about dementia, there's a lot of diseases can be avoided or risk reduced if they just take ownership of their health.
Yeah.
Okay. If you see somebody with dementia, you know, how they suffer and how challenging it is and things like that, they would just say, whoa, I don't get there, you know, in 20, 30 years. So what do I do or not do? You know, live well, you know, eat well, you know, because in the end of the day, what's good for your heart is good for your brains. That's what we say about dementia. And dementia for now do not have a cure. You know, I won't say prevent, but I would say risk reduce.
Yeah,
you know,
because so we still don't know what causes it.
Yes, and youth spends most of the time with their elders because parents are off at work. Youth come home from school and they have a lot of time with the elder. And if they are aware of the 10 signs of dementia, you know, sometimes they can flag their parents and say, hey, mom and dad, I think granny left her glasses in the fridge again. So do you think we should get her to an diagnosis? You know, because we always advocate with early diagnosis, there's a lot can be done.
What are the 10 signs?
Okay, well, one of them would be, like I say, leaving your glasses, you know, or leaving your keys where you don't. Inappropriately, you know, falls, because people with dementia have some spatial difficulty. They can't see steps. So that's where design and architecture comes in. You know, waking up and wondering is another.
Repetitive question.
Yes, that's right. You know, you can Google this 10 signs on the net. Okay. Usual occurrence, but yet for persons with dementia, these are very telling signs, you know, and people tend to like brush it off or not see, even though you see.
Yeah.
You know, but the youth, they are more intuitive and they can flag their parents and say, let's go for early diagnosis.
Yeah. Calista, did you think your grandmother had early signs?
Yes, definitely. Most definitely she showed early signs.
When did you sort of start to become aware that there was a problem?
Okay, so she began to wander around a lot. And when she wandered around, she would fall. So she broke her arm twice, if I'm not wrong. So these signs, a lot of people tend to brush them off as normal aging. And because of this, I guess a lot of Alzheimer's disease or dementia gets underdiagnosed.
You know, Dr. Azlina, the fact that we don't know what causes dementia, Parkinson's and all of that, a lot of these neurodegenerative diseases, does it make awareness building a little bit more challenging? Because it's easy to say diabetes, reduce your sugar, you know, eat healthy, whatever. Yeah, you can say eat healthy, you'll help with Alzheimer's. What does that really mean? There's no guarantee.
Yes, it is a challenge. That's why it's also, I think, if you see people, if you have the opportunity to get involved with people who do have dementia, and you see how debilitating the condition is and how it affects the other people, as, you know, Datin was saying, that will have an impact on you. You know, you will immediately think, you know, I don't want to, you know, live like that when I'm older. And, you know, you will then take steps to try to avoid it. The key thing about the creating awareness is making people aware of the signs so you can pick it up early, but also recognizing those symptoms in people that you may meet in public that you don't know them, like strangers, right? And knowing how to approach them. What happens a lot of the time is if people have dementia and you go to weddings, you go to kanduri, you go to whatever, you know, they think, oh, you know, but they don't know me anyway. They don't recognize me. There's no point going up and saying hello, you know, so they get isolated. And so, you know, you want to teach people, how do you approach? There are certain ways that, you know, when you go up and just say hello, you don't have to make lengthy conversation, but acknowledge that they are there and be able to sort of respond to how communicative they are. So if they look at you and they can appear to communicate, then, you know, you can take it further. You know, oh, you look very nice today. Have you eaten? Mm-hmm. You know, try to engage them. But if they are sort of perhaps in the later stages of the disease and they can't communicate, that doesn't mean that you still don't try to communicate. You know, you can still say nice things. Oh, you know, you're wearing pink, you know, because as you talk good. To them, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you look good, not just that you're wearing pink, but that, you know, as you talk to them, you know, that is making their brain work. You're indirectly helping them in that sense. Yes. And also shaking their hand and, you know, trying to make eye contact. You know, we always talk about preserving their dignity.
The misconception is the brain is not working. It is not. Is it or is it not, Doctor? Isn't it? And if it is, to what extent?
Parts of the brain don't work as well as they do in people who don't have dementia. But that's not to say that it's a complete zero. There will be times, and caregivers are often surprised, that sometimes there will be moments where you have weeks and weeks of somebody saying no, and then suddenly a moment of clarity comes up and they go, that nasi lemak is really nice. You know, something, you know?
Yes.
And you go,
yes.
Whoa. If it was zero, how could they say that? Or they suddenly, they look at you, make eye contact, and they say, oh, hello there. You know, they mention your name. And you only experience that. You only know that if you have met people, if you've interacted with people.
That's right.
So if you don't know, if you stay away from them, you automatically will think, oh, there's nothing there. So there's no point to engage them in conversation.
That's
right?
Why yesterday, in the first day of our session for the youth engagement program, the students were working with persons with dementia. Azlina came in with some, you know, herbs, you know, to, you know, how do you say?
Sense of smell.
Stimulate the smell sense, you know. She came up with a mini golf course and things like that. And so happens, we had a person who used to play golf, looked at it and say, okay. I said, would you like to try? And he hit the ball into the hole and was coaching us in
how to
golf.
And this is an individual with dementia.
Yes, that's right. And we had another lady who bakes really nice brownies because she comes for our weekly yoga. And in appreciation, she said, okay, I want to make brownies for my friends. So she came with it. All right. So Dr. Azlina was asking her, what would you like to do the next week? Would you like to do something? And she says, and because I know she make good brownies, I said, would you like to teach us how to bake your secret recipe brownie? She says, oh, yes, why not? Mm-hmm. So we're getting ingredients and learn her delicious brownies tomorrow. So we're actually learning golf and baking brownies, you know, from persons with dementia. Yeah. How impressive is that?
Yeah. What's happening there? Is it that certain part of the brain just needs to be activated in that situation?
The thing about dementia is that individually the parts may still work somewhat. But it's also the connection between them. You know, you still have a sense of smell. Your brain can still record a smell, but you just can't remember what's the name of that leaf. You know, and that's what we saw yesterday. And we sort of tried to engage them. Okay, you know, down Kasum, would you cook it? What kind of dishes would you
use? Dr. Azlina, I forgot the name.
I was just going to say.
Yes. So like that, I'm not having dementia, I hope.
Consistently, she says, all the time, putting the glasses in the fridge consistently, not just a one-off experience.
That's right. And so, you know, these activities, we kind of thought of them as ways of, they're just examples of simple activities that you can do at home, nothing expensive, nothing complicated. You know, you could always get some ideas by coming to the community center and then going home and, you know, continuing doing the same thing with your loved one there. I wanted activities that the students would also be able to handle. It has to be a good pairing, you know, a good level and of something that the students could also relate to and talk about and deliver, you know, well, as well as being able to accommodate a range of different stages. So, you know, those that are more communicative and those that can handle more things, then they can do more complicated shapes, for example, with the clay and other types of activities. Whereas those who need help with more things, then, you know, we sort of tailor it appropriately. And so, you know, it's also trying to open up the caregivers as well, because, you know, a lot of the time you get stuck and it's difficult to know what else can I do. There's actually quite a lot that can be done. Yeah. So I what do you think, Calista?
You were involved, Calista?
Yeah. So what was really interesting is that we got a range of dementia patients. At different stages. So you have some that are really, they look really normal and they're still really communicative. But there are also some who has lost
ability to talk.
Right, yeah. And it's really interesting to see. But also the way we engage with each stage is different.
And I think that's important. You know, it's a learning process, isn't it? You know?
Mm-hmm. Very much a learning process. Datin, Jacqueline, I know the centre, the Atria Centre, is actually more for, it's a daycare centre for people with dementia, you know.
It's not a daycare centre, but a community centre where public can get information, get to know more. Same time, we do health talks on Saturday, but it's a range of health talks because dementia is, we don't know the source and there's no prevention, but I do know that non-communicable diseases like diabetes, you know, obesity, you know, heart, etc., gets you there, you know, because anything wrong with us in our system is a matter of time. It gets to your heart and it gets to your brains, you know. We talk about enjoying our golden years. Are you enjoying your golden years if you are, you know, having a degenerative disease of the mind, you know? It's challenging. I don't think anybody would want to get there in their golden years. So this is something where the centre actually creates awareness, you know, not only about dementia, but take care of your health. If you just take care of your own health, bravo. you know, you're just one person, we achieved buy-in towards risk reducing getting dementia in your later years.
You spoke about a daycare centre just now. Are there many daycare centres around in the country?
Not that I know of, which is run for dementia. We have one in Section 11, and it's been for 20 years. We operate Monday to Fridays, 8 to 5. You can log on adfm.com.my to find out more and where it is. Come for a visit and talk to us. Or you may like to get more information. We're at Atria, which is the public. And it's a welcoming place. We call that the happy place.
Yes. Atria Shopping Centre.
Yes.
Yeah, right around the corner from us, actually.
Third floor. Mm-hmm. Third floor, lot 3. It's just 2 doors from Daiso.
Okay. Yeah. And just a quick question on the caregivers. Mm-hmm. What sort of support... is there any support for the caregivers at all?
We do some outreach programs, you know. There are some courses for caregivers, learning how to care, even on diet and nutrition. We do actually have a more intensive one where we call Train the Trainers on dementia care skills, where we are doing annually in a select group of 15, whereby we teach 6 modules. This is what we call a certification, where we work with the Alzheimer's Disease International to prepare ourselves to manage dementia in time to come. Because there are forecast results whereby the year 2030, Asia has 68% of diagnosed dementia cases. That's very high for Asia.
Yeah.
All right. Singapore is first, second is Thailand, third is Brunei, surprisingly. Malaysia is fifth, you know, and numbers are high. You know, so we do foresee by 2030 there'll be a whole lot of cases, you know. And we call dementia the 21st century disease, not cancer, not heart. And until a cure is found, we need to prepare and manage it. And the only way to do it is to educate caregivers on how it is, symptoms, how to care for. So this annual Train the Trainers is a way of us coming up with what we call master trainers, where not only do we train local caregivers as well as health professionals, we also train people who seek help overseas. But at the moment, because we lack human resources, we can't afford to help them yet, but in time.
But in order to care, there's a strong element of culture as well that's involved. And you would take that into consideration
as
well.
Yes, we do. There is a module where we need to understand the local culture, the faith, religion, and so on and so forth, and tailor make with it. That's why we have to work with a local person. Say, for example, if you're from Vietnam, you know, this is your faith, and this is your reminiscence, you know, how you remember. You see, one thing very interesting about dementia is they remember everything that's old or before, but you do not remember anything yesterday or even today. We used to say, well, take it as a hard disk where you fill it up and when it's full, nothing new goes in. So what the hard disk has is something old. So with that, if we go to another country, for example, we do have to take into consideration and work with a local doctor, you know, or an association whereby they would tell us, okay, this is what we do. This is famous people, you know, these are, you know.
Reminiscence therapy, call it,
we call it. Say, for example, we have this thing where, do you recognize this actress? In our case, it's P. Ramlee. Everybody knows P. Ramlee.
Right.
Take him to Vietnam and they look at you. Not even a person with dementia. A normal person will look at you and say, who's that?
Yeah. So you can imagine, actually, it's quite funny. In, you know, 30, 40 years, we are going to have to show the elderly population K-pop stars as part of their reminiscence therapy, you know,
and
it's not going to be.
It's not going to be Ramlee.
They would ask cultural respect now.
Yeah, and you'll have to decide: did you go to international school? Did you go to government school? All of that plays a part as to what your exposure really is.
That's right.
Wow, that's going to be complicated, man.
Be lots of pictures.
Yes, lots of pictures and documenting now, taking into account what's going to happen in the future. Dr. Alina, Singapore is leading in terms of the number of dementia cases. Am I correct? As what Jacqueline just said. Does that say something about, or can we learn as to what's happening in Singapore?
Singapore has a lot of amenities and support systems, I think, that actually still encourages the elderly and also the people living with dementia to try to live independent lives as long as possible. And I think that's great. I think maybe something about the cultural system there, you know, in Malaysia, perhaps people take your elderly parents in and you take over the role of the carer and you absorb them into your life, so to speak. Whereas I think in Japan and also in Singapore, you know, the elderly population, they tend to live away from their children and so they need to support themselves, so they work for longer. So in that sense, then maybe there are a lot more out there. And so then if there are problems that come out, then they're more easily identified.
What about if you look at what's caused that problem? Have we done any research or analysis on why Singapore has so many people with dementia?
Do you know that?
I would tend to think, reading so much and looking at statistics, back to what we say, non-communicable disease. When you get diabetes, how? You take more sugar, carbs, you know, that turn into sugar that gives you diabetes. So this is something prevalent in Asia because rice is our staple. Most of the time, you don't get a balanced diet. Mm-hmm. And when you look at Singapore, Thailand, and Brunei as the top three, these are what we call affluent countries, you know. So not only would it be diet of sweets, you know, and carbs, but it's also rich food. You know, so it goes back to what I believe as well, what we eat is what we become, you know. So I would think nutrition and diet has a big part to play. And again, you look at non-communicable diseases like diabetes, obesity, heart, they're all derived from one of these, again, and what we eat.
Dr. Alina, any brain-stimulating activities for us that you can recommend now? Everybody says do Sudoku, you know, that kind of thing. does that really play a role? I mean, or should we just read, or should we just exercise, or what is it?
Yes, yes, and yes. So yes, do Sudoku if you like doing Sudoku. Yes, you should read. And yes, exercise. Mahjong, I think,
Been linked.
Yeah,
some studies have been done
Take up a different
mahjong.
Language.
Yeah, learn something new. Dancing, there was recently something about dancing, wasn't there?
Take up music.
Yeah, take up music.
God, I'm going to get my piano back.
Anything that you enjoy that uses your brains, that make you work a little bit harder to master it.
Challenges.
Yes.
Even, you know, learning how to use smartphones, you know, like learning how to navigate WhatsApp and everything. You know, that's also something new. It's you're learning new technology, but it's also socialize, I think. If you're going to do some exercise, you know, if you go to the park, don't just, you know, walk around and not say hello to anybody. You know, also add on, if you can, you know, try to make conversation, you know, with people that are also there. That's also helpful for the brain.
You know, I was walking in Penang along Batu Feringhi one morning or Saturday morning, and tons of cyclists were passing by. Mm. And so many of them wished me good morning. And I was like, wow. Okay, so then I was pressured to start wishing them good morning as they passed by.
Somebody should just initiate
it. And then,
now
you know,
they just use their headphones, right? And they're listening to music. Yeah, and everybody's
always
just feel, in their own world.
A smile. Mm. Because you always get a smile back, you know. Mm. Yeah, it's a nice thing to start a conversation, you know.
You just need somebody to lead the way, I suppose. Would you have a message, Datin Jacqueline, this Brain Awareness Week?
I'd like to say from experience, and I can't say enough, live for the moment. If you look at the persons with dementia, we think we are teaching them something. Actually, they are teaching us something. Mm-hmm. They forget the past, that's fine, because it can be good, it can be bad, but they live for the moment, and you can see the interaction we had and how they feel and how we feel. We felt happy, you know.
It changes
and
you.
Yes, yes. And basically, why? Because we lived that moment. You know, so live that moment and be positive.
Calista.
So I think the social aspect of it is really important too. Mm. And that's why the community center it's a really good project, a place where we can bring our loved ones with dementia out to socialize even. And it not only keeps their brain active, but it also creates awareness, especially when the youth go and visit our, you know, do some engagement programs or something.
Are you going to do that?
Yeah, so...
Already doing that?
Yeah, so we visited the center yesterday. That was quite interesting.
Yeah. So actually, there's going to be in total 4 sessions that we're doing at the center. So yesterday was the first one. And then this Thursday, and then the 20th, I think, 20th and 22nd. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if anybody is interested, they can
come and join us. Yeah, and same time, Atria is having a youth expo as well in conjunction with this, you know. They're having a step up project, step, you know, as social, T as trade, E as engaging, and P as play, you know, for this whole month of March. So do log onto the website. It involves youth.
You have a takeaway?
A take-home message. I think, well, for Brain Awareness Week, make the week at the start of a change. If you feel that you can improve, you know, eat better, get out, socialize, you know, learn something new, take up something. Let this week, or at least this month, be the start of something towards, you know, trying to reduce your risk of age-related diseases, especially dementia.
So if you'd like to contact the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation Malaysia, it's adfm.com.my. And the Atria Alzheimer's Community Centre is at the 3rd floor, Atria Shopping Centre. So join them the whole of this week. And also, the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation of Malaysia is one of the supporting partners for our BFM Health and Living Life 2018, which is happening on the 7th of April. So we look forward to seeing you all there. And thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, a neurogeneticist, Calista Lee, a youth caregiver, and Datin Jacqueline Wong from the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation of Malaysia, speaking to us about Brain Awareness Week on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.